This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
All right, we're back. Frank with Brian and Plowsy, Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Gatesworth, one of our great sponsors. Finest in senior living. If you're looking for a place for mom or dad, aunt or uncle, grandma or grandpa, we recommend the Gatesworth. They do it senior living about as well as anybody can do it. The answer is always yes when you call down to the front desk. H. Balzer joins us now, our football guru in St. Louis. H., your take on why Drew Locke did not go in the first round. You have some insight.
Yeah, I did some sleuthing last night on it because I, like many, thought he would be a first-round pick. Obviously, you never know how the draft is going to go. But when he wasn't in that group of four quarterbacks taken in the first round, so the one of the issues could be is his hand size. And I know a lot of people would say, oh, come on, let's not get carried away here. But these NFL teams look at every issue. And Drew Locke's hands are pretty small at 9 inches. And just to give an explanation or a comparison, Kyler Murray's 9.5. Dwayne Haskins is 9 5/8. Daniel Jones is 9 3/4. Now, some would say, oh, what's a half an inch? What's a 3/4 inch? Well, when you're talking about your hands and your hand size in terms of the football, that can be an issue. And apparently there's also an issue with his hands where he has trouble. It kind of sounds strange of separating his fingers and that he throws a lot with his thumb. And that Mizzou, what I'm told, actually they used a smaller ball for him to play with. And he did, Frank, talk at his pro day that he was going to have to adjust to the NFL football. And so this could be what teams are looking at and saying, hey, first-round pick, not so sure he's going to have to overcome some of that. And so when the draft gets back underway this evening, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the two rounds tonight. I would think there's pretty good value there, but if he starts to slide even more, then it could very well be that this hand size is an issue and could have contributed to his lackluster completion percentage at Mizzou.
So after 12,000 yards and 99 touchdowns, his hands aren't quite big enough.
Well, you know, that's all those yards. Apparently, if it was a smaller ball, it's a smaller ball. And so, you know, while everyone always talks about production in college and yards and, you know, and all those things, yeah, that's certainly important. But when NFL teams project guys to the league, they look at this stuff very closely. And especially with the football in the NFL where, hey, you can't, oh, we'll have a smaller ball for our quarterback because his hands are a little smaller. And that's been issues. It's been an issue with other quarterbacks and it comes up from time to time. And so he does have the production in college. There's no question about it. But the one thing we always have to be mindful of is that's college football. It's not the National Football League. And those are the things that a lot of these little nuances is what NFL teams look at, you know, quite a bit.
Boy, that's wild. Let me ask you this. I'm probably catching you off guard, but can you point to an example of somebody in the NFL who maybe had smaller hands that had success? I mean, I know you're not, you know, looking at hand sizes very often, but
not a lot. No, I mean, it's a good question. It's one I'd probably have to look at to see who potentially did have that issue and still ended up being productive in the NFL. I can't think of anyone off the top of my head. I do know, and I do recall at least. I think Tony Banks had pretty small hands.
Oh boy.
didn't want to bring up a bad memory for St. Louis fans, but the consistency is what it is. You know, it doesn't mean just because, oh, that means you can't throw a football. And it doesn't mean that every football you're going to throw is going to be bad. But certainly consistency is what you want to see with quarterbacks. And so a lot of times that hand size can contribute to a little bit of inconsistency. And that's why I say I think tonight will tell the tale. When you start looking at this second round, Frank, and you say, well, you know, Giants and Redskins, and obviously Arizona got the quarterbacks they wanted. The only team that didn't, that everyone thought would be looking at a quarterback, is Miami and maybe Denver. and Miami doesn't pick till 20th in the first round. Denver's at 23rd. I think an intriguing team could be New England because they have 3 second-round picks at 25, 29, and 32. And so you know that they're going to be picking a quarterback at some point who they believe will be the next alleged heir apparent to Tom Brady. And so that could end up happening with those 3 picks if they believe that can be worked with and that he can develop into a consistent, you know, productive quarterback in the NFL. So it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be interesting to see what happens tonight.
Let's stay with the quarterback theme. Gil Brandt actually compared Daniel Jones to Peyton Manning. No, I mean, I don't think anybody anticipated Daniel Jones going 6 to the Giants. How could the opinions on him be so varied? Or was it just one opinion, the Giants, who had him as a top 6 player?
Well, here's the thing about it. We always have to be mindful of the draft. And I say this many, many times. It doesn't really matter what Mel Kiper thinks or Todd McShay or Daniel Jeremiah or whoever it might be. And all those guys do a very good job analyzing players. But they're not the teams. And you never know how the teams truly rate guys. And so the Giants, and there's been a lot of buzz about Daniel Jones in the last few days. In fact, there had been talk that the Redskins had an interest in him and might potentially trade up in the first round to get Daniel Jones. And so obviously the Giants liked them an awful lot. I thought that they could potentially take him at 17, but they felt we want to take him at 6 because if we wait till 17, we might lose him. Someone else could, you know, could end up taking him. And so he definitely is, quote, a late riser, if you talk about that. But I always say when everyone says they're surprised, it's because no one, like I said, no one truly knows what teams think. I saw a great tweet last night, Frank. This is off the quarterbacks just for a moment. But there was a lot of surprise when the Raiders took Cleveland Farrell, the defensive lineman from Clemson, at 4th overall. And so someone tweeted, if Mike Mayock, who is now the Raiders general manager, had still been at NFL Network and had been raving about Cleveland Farrell for the last 2 weeks about a guy who should be a top 5, top 10 pick in the draft, if he had been doing that and then some team took him at 4 overall, everyone was saying, oh yeah, okay, Mike Mayock thought he was that good a player. But here's Mayock with the Raiders, and now people are questioning it. And I think it's interesting that the atmosphere that exists in draft talk and draft, you know, speculation is that there seems to be a feeling in the public's eye sometimes that the Kipers and the McShays and those guys know more than these teams. And I've always thought that was an interesting aspect of it. But that is the key. And back to your question about Daniel Jones, is that most everyone thought him as a first-round pick. No, a lot of people didn't think he would go that high. But as we know, all it takes is one team believing in a guy and not wanting to take a chance that they won't be able to get him later.
Boy, the Raiders pick at 4 was kind of baffling.
What's that? Yeah, well, that's what I was just talking about. Yeah, exactly, with Cleveland Farrell. Exactly. And that's what I was just saying, is that, you know, Mike Mayock is a big part of that pick. And what's interesting, of course, is we saw the story in the last week or so that came out about how the Raiders sent their scouts home, and there was this talk, yeah, maybe that means it'll be a surprise pick, and they didn't want a scout leaking it. And what was interesting is it was actually about 3 weeks ago they sent the scouts home, and as Mike Mayock said late last night after they made their picks, he said within like 40 minutes after we sent them home, it leaked that we sent them home. So I guess we were right in what we did. So it's kind of interesting, all this stuff that goes on behind the scenes a lot of times that many of us are not truly aware of.
Well, how about that Charlie Army story with London Fletcher, where he would not even tell his scouts, his own Rams scouts, how much he liked him. And then as soon as the draft was over, Charlie's first phone call was to sign Fletcher.
Yeah, that, you know, Gil Brandt told a story, Frank, and somewhat similar to that. This was years and years ago. There was a linebacker, I think he was from Duke, Mike Junkin, who was considered decent player, but no one thought he'd be a high pick, and ended up, I think the Browns took him like 5th overall. And Gil Brandt told the story that they didn't really like Junkin, but they had a feeling that they had a scout or someone in their organization who was leaking stuff. So they brought a certain scout into their war room and draft room, and they had changed their board to put Mike Junkin up high on their list. And then 2 days later, one of the beat writers for the Cowboys, a guy named Jim Dent, wrote in the paper that the Cowboys were probably going to draft Mike Junkin. So they knew right away that that was the scout that was leaking stuff. So, you know, you just never know about this stuff. And sometimes you don't know if it's true or not, what some of these scouts leak. But a lot of times it is true.
H, how many drafts have you now covered and analyzed?
Well, in terms of covering them, it's been 42. And I think, you know, last night I was on with Charlie Tuna for a couple of hours breaking down the first round.
Sorry about that.
Through until 9 o'clock. And I believe it's in the 30s that I've actually done live coverage, whether it's on TV or the radio, with the draft. And, Adam Schefter did a solid yesterday. 2 days ago, ESPN, the PR guy, tweeted out the first first draft press release from 1980 when they announced who was going to be on the telecast. And my name was in the headline along with Joe Thomas and Upton Bell. And so he tweeted that out 2 days ago. And Adam, to his 7 million followers, retweeted it yesterday. So I thanked Adam for that. But, yeah, 1980, the first televised draft that I was a part of, and certainly been a part of many, many since then.
H, honored to have you on the program. Thank you so much for your insight. We'll talk next week or so to break down the overall draft.
Sounds good, Frank. Anytime. Always enjoy it. Take care.
All right. H. Balzer, 42 NFL drafts. That is incredible. There's a great picture of him at that first draft, too. Have you seen that, haven't you?
I have, yes.
Yeah. Is it Kuiper and Berman with him? I don't even know who's in it. But you can just see those old ABC – no, those old ESPN logos that are classic. Brian, do you have a little bit of a business?
Well, I do. I want to mention Martin is going to be joining us next segment. He and Charlie, because you've probably been wondering where Martin's been this hour. Him and Charlie, starting at 12, will be broadcasting from the Social Bar off 4265 Rivas Barracks Road. This will go all the way until 6 o'clock. You're going to want to listen because we'll be giving away Blues tickets during Cam Show from 5 to 6. And also, this is for Game 2 on Saturday. Also giving away a pair of tickets to Samus Game 2 through social media. So follow 5-9 of the Fan on Facebook and Twitter to find out how to win the tickets that way. And next week, Frank's Cinco de Mayo is on Sunday, May 5th. So on Friday, May 3rd, in anticipation for it, we'll be broadcasting live from Rosalita's on Washington Avenue all day, starting with the morning after, broadcasting all the way until 6 p.m., the Cam Jansen Show. Rosalita's Cantina is St. Louis's go-to Tex-Mex all throughout the year, but especially on Cinco de Mayo. It is St. Louis's go-to party spot. With live music all day featuring DJ Music, Mariachi Mendez STL, and Latin band Vladimir Ferreira, you can ride the Mechanical Bull plus two balloon twisters and two face painters will be there. Tex-Mex, margaritas, and Cinco de Mayo done right. It's all happening at Rosalita's on Washington Avenue.
We'll take a break. Martin will join us when we come back.